My name is Victoria Ketty, and you are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today we'll hear from Alexis Goldsmith, the National Organizing Director at Beyond Plastics, to give an overview of the variety of bills in Albany that may affect the environment locally. We'll also hear about the environment locally from the Catskill Maker Syndicate with their daily Better Weather, and we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service, plus other music and more on the WGXC Morning Show. It all starts after the local news. Stay tuned.
Network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network.
There is a wild edible plant walk at the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene County's Hudson location out on Route 66 on Wednesday, May 11th from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. You will learn about how to collect food without disturbing or endangering a plant population, what's safe to eat in the woods locally, and the walk will end inside with a discussion on how to incorporate wild local foods into meals. Find out more information about the Wild Edible Plant Walk Wednesday, May 11th from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the Cornell Cooperative Extension's Columbia County branch in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant in Freehold, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Melanie Lukosovic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that after several months of unpredictable utility prices, Central Hudson now claims electricity rates have declined by 55% in May. Quote, Central Hudson's residential price for electrical supply has declined significantly from 13.6 cents per kilowatt hour in April to 6.12 cents per kilowatt hour effective May 11th, unquote, according to a statement from the company. Natural gas prices also decreased from 97.1 cents per 100 cubic feet in April to 64 cents per 100 cubic feet in May, effective May 1st. The fluctuating rates are due to volatility in the energy markets. Quote, this coupled with the potential of increased demand during the summer could have an impact on electric supply prices in the coming months, unquote, according to the company. The rise in supply prices for electricity and natural gas was due to a number of factors, including increased domestic demand due to a colder winter, constrained domestic pipeline capacity, and increased global demand for natural gas. Central Hudson is currently the focus of an investigation by the State Department of Public Service into the company's billing practices that have led to billing errors over the past few months, according to Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan, who requested the investigation. Hundreds of local residents filed complaints about billing after some utility customers saw their monthly bills increase by 2- and 3-fold in recent months. Read more about this story at theupstater.com.
Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that Democratic Chairwoman Kelly McKenzie said the committee to fill vacancies for the 19th Congressional District filed a certificate of substitution for Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan with the State Board of Elections on May 9th. The move will allow Ryan to replace Representative Antonio Delgado on the ballot for the New York 19th Congressional District. Delgado was just named Lieutenant Governor by Governor Kathy Hochul, but has not officially resigned and has not yet said exactly when he will leave that office. Delgado, a Democrat, was going to face Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro this November. Ryan's filing gives him the right to replace Delgado on the ballot. Daniel Torres, a spokesperson for the Democrat, said, and I quote, "Today's papers were filed in Albany as part of a technical procedure to ensure that County Executive Ryan has as many options as possible as he continues to discuss with his family and neighbors about a potential candidacy for Congress," end quote. Torres also said Ryan, and I quote, "has received support from residents all over upstate New York who are inspired by his record of service and who are fearful of Washington extremism taking over this seat," end quote. Ryan is expected to announce a decision later this week. Saugerties-based State Senator Michelle Henchy said last week that she is not running for the congressional seat, but for re-election. What the 19th Congressional District is remains up in the air as the court threw out redistricting maps Democrats in Albany drew as gerrymandered. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Greta Gochum is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that across all four western Massachusetts counties, more than 2,800 people faced homelessness one night in February, more than double the previous year. Quote, "We have nowhere near enough housing, and then our renters spend far more than what is reasonable on housing costs," unquote, said Kaylee Pereira, director of the three-county continuum of care. The number of people found to be chronically homeless across western Massachusetts more than doubled this year, jumping from 118 to 303 people. The data is collected annually in the Point in Time Count, a survey for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Quote, "Our chronically homeless number is very high and the highest it's been in this five-year period," unquote. Jerry McCafferty, director of Springfield's Office of Housing and the Hampton Continuum of Care. While the number of homeless families stayed about the same, the number of homeless individuals have increased since 2021. Overall risk factors for homelessness increased during the pandemic, McCafferty said. Quote, "The pandemic continues to take a severe toll," unquote, "and homelessness is impacting people of color more. Compared to the general Western Massachusetts population, there are 2.6 times the number of black people and 3 times the number of Hispanic and Latino people who are homeless," McCafferty said. Construct, a Southern Berkshire housing nonprofit, has 77 units of permanent housing available in the Berkshires and 800 households on the waiting list, said Jane Ralph, the organization's executive director. "The wait list has always been long, but it has increased over the last several months. While Berkshire County housing groups are working to address the need, there are not enough resources," she said. "Housing stock needs to be increased." Keith Ferry, president and CEO of Wayfinders, a regional housing organization, said, quote, "We need more supply," unquote. Quote, "We need to decrease the local barriers in our region. We need to work together toward that vision," unquote. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Michelle Del Rey reports in the Times Union that environmental activists in New York are consistently insisting that the state turn completely to electric power rather than burning fossil fuels to slow global warming and attempt to save the planet. Many environmental groups, for instance, are opposing a new anti-pollution bill from Democrats Kari Warner and Kevin S. Parker aimed to lower the intensity of on-road transportation by 20% by 2030. Peter Iwanowitz, executive director of Environmental Advocates New York, said, and I quote, "There is a right way to fund our climate law and the wrong way. Regressive policies like this that also continue pollution hotspots are clearly the wrong way," end quote. The New York City Environmental Justice Alliance said, and I quote, "This policy focuses only on the carbon intensity of a fuel rather than taking into account the overall greenhouse gas emissions and resulting co-pollution. By proposing the use of fuels for transportation rather than electrification, this policy would continue to incentivize the combustion of fuels other than fossil gas, which still contribute to climate change and result in severe health impacts, particularly in disadvantaged communities where pollution is concentrated," end quote. Buildings account for 32% of the New York's climate heating greenhouse gas emissions, and legislators earlier this year considered banning fossil fuels in new buildings. Washington State recently became the first in the country to mandate that newly constructed buildings be outfitted with all-electric space heating and hot water systems as more of the country moves away from fossil fuels. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that under legislation proposed by state lawmakers and the good government organization Common Cause, disgraced ex-office holders could face restrictions on the use of their campaign funds once out of office. The bill would apply to former officials who are impeached and removed from office, convicted of a crime while in office, or resign following the release of findings pointing to criminal conduct. If signed into law, the measure would prohibit the use of campaign funds by the former official for political purposes and require them to close out the account within 2 years. At a news conference May 10th in Albany, the lawmakers backing the bill, State Senator Alessandra Biaggia and Assemblymember Phil Steck, named former Governor Andrew Cuomo as the most recent example of a former official that would be impacted by the law. Cuomo has accessed millions of dollars he raised while in office to fund TV ads meant to refute the sexual harassment and inappropriate conduct allegations leveled against him. Quote, "New Yorkers donate to candidates with the expectation that they will act with integrity and uphold the public trust should they assume office," unquote, Biaggi said. Quote, "When elected officials violate that trust, they should not be able to influence our politics with funds previously raised," unquote. Cuomo's spokesperson, Rich Azzopardi, said in a statement called the proposal unconstitutional. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
There are marches planned May 14th in Hudson, Albany, Kingston, and cities across the country after the leak of the Supreme Court decision to overturn the Roe v. Wade case later this year. The Women's March has held massive rallies after President Donald Trump was elected and around some of his nominations for Supreme Court justices. The group tweeted, and I quote, "It's time for us to show up in force for Roe v. Wade. That's why we're marching all across the country for abortion rights next week," end quote. The Hudson event is from 1 to 2 p.m. May 14th at the Planned Parenthood Health Center, 804 Columbus Street. The Kingston event is from 11 a.m. until noon at the Academy Green Park, 238 Clinton Avenue. In Albany, organizers have not said where the rally will be, but that it will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, sunny with a high near 73 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly clear with a low of around 48. And on Thursday, sunny with a high near 81 degrees. And Thursday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 55 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia County.
Wednesday, May 11th, tune in to 90.7 FM for all sorts of creative community voices, including at 10 a.m., the Synth Eclectico show is on with tracks from Jawa, James Vitz Wong, and Kin Leon, among others. Then, Maria Manhattan hosts the Hudson Cafe from Hudson with songs from the American Songbook. And then at noon, we are live from Catskill, Spike Priggen and his Bedazzled Radio Hour from Spike's Record Rack on Main Street in Catskill. At 4 p.m., we're live from Acre with the WGXC Afternoon Show. At 7 p.m., we're live from New York City with the Off the Hook Show, simulcast from WBAI in New York with the Hacker Quarterly 2600 crew talking technology. At 8 p.m., Catskill's Neva Wartell gives you music for the masses this week from Africa. And at 10 p.m. from Ulster County, Rob Saffer has all sorts of new releases on his Overlooked program on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
If you have some broken electronics or equipment or jewelry that you want to repair, the Chatham Repair Cafe is going to be held on May 14th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Chatham Firehouse. The Chatham Repair Cafe is hosted by several climate smart communities in the area, and you can bring your broken item to the Chatham Repair Cafe to get fixed or learn how to fix it yourself. That's May 14th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Chatham Firehouse. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about this and many other local community events.
The world is all about looking, seeing, and wonder for writer and naturalist Leslie Sharp.
The thing about the Catskills is the sky. It's always changing. And looking out and seeing these colors, these soft little brushstrokes starting in the hills, you know, in the fall and in the spring, it's like living in an impressionist painting here.
To hear more voices from around the Catskills and Hudson Valley, listen to Ginger Radio Hour every first and third Tuesday of the month at 10 a.m. Music plus people on Ginger Radio Hour, only on WGXC.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, May 11th. Early morning temperatures range from 39 degrees in Jewett to 44 in Saugerties. Soil temperature is 52 degrees. And it is dry because that sun keeps on baking the ground. Water early, protect everything later. And they're going to need it because today a high of 79 happens at 4 p.m. We're going to have sunny skies, light winds, and most of the day will feel like the 60s, nice and comfortable. But while you're out there having fun, be sure to protect from the sun because the UV index will be up. Overnight, temperatures fall to 51 degrees, then bounce back up to 82 tomorrow afternoon. Some clouds finally showing back up in the skies. 62 degrees overnight takes us into a Saturday with a rainy and potentially stormy afternoon and a high of 78, setting up a pattern for Sunday and Monday. Pollen levels for today will be high, of course, with tree pollen being the heavy hitter. Today's tide schedule is Low tide at 6:12 a.m. High tide at 11:33 a.m. Low tide again at 6:43 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 55 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:49 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:35 a.m. Looking way up, we see sunspot AR3006 is kicking up flare activity. It caused a radio blackout over the Atlantic yesterday. It also happened to spit out some CMEs, and NASA is still calculating trajectories. Solar wind speed is currently 266 kilometers per second at 9.5 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor till dark, then fair below 15 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet. The current sunspot number is 62. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Miles and Pepper of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Tune in to all sorts of live radio shows every Sunday on WGXC 90.7 FM, beginning at 8 a.m., where the Reverend Kim Singletary is live with There's a Bright Side Somewhere from Columbia County every Sunday at 8 a.m. Then at 9 a.m., Janessa Hope McKay brings you a slap of reality live from the WGXC studio in Hudson in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. She's playing her top music picks and talking about her hot topics of the week until 11 a.m. At 1 p.m., every Sunday, DJ Neva Wartell is live with music for the masses from Catskill, with sounds from around the world. At 4 p.m. every Sunday, Carlene Murphy and Azuka Legba are live with the Lile Latan version of the WGXC afternoon show until 6 p.m. And every Sunday night, Tony Fallon is live with the Irish show at 8 p.m. on the radio from Acre on 90.7 WGXC.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Taylor.
What do you want?
Turn on the radio.
I'm talking to you.
You're being grotesque.
The radio, remember? Make it work.
Radio. It tends to induce.
Slows down. Now it's pretty late.
Why don't you switch on the radio?
I refuse to discuss it any further.
Oh, please, you must.
Please don't treat me like a mental patient.
Do you believe that? Not for a second. Do you realize what this means?
Don't look for it, Taylor.
That's the radio.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
And suddenly...
Thank you.
Governor Kathy Hochul on Tuesday announced a new state fund for supporting abortion providers in anticipation of the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. She directed the State Department of Health to put $25 million into a fund to expand capacity and ensure access, as well as $10 million for reproductive health centers to acquire security grants to keep providers safe.
And we have seen the threats and actually the action of anti-abortion violence. And the climate is getting more extreme every single day. So it's only going to get worse as this decision is rendered in the next few weeks. And we need to be ready, and we will be ready here in the state of New York.
Hochul called on the federal government to codify Roe versus Wade and also repeal the Hyde Amendment, which prevents federal funding from going to abortions. The state attorney general and lawmakers in the New York state legislature have announced the Reproductive Freedom and Equity Program, a bill that would provide financial resources to abortion providers and support the influx of individuals who are and will be coming to New York to access abortions. If Roe versus Wade is overturned, 26 states will ban or are likely to ban abortion, and about 40 million women live in those states. State Senator Cordell Clear of New York City sponsored the bill. She emphasizes that access to abortion is a fundamental part of women's health care.
Any rollback or constraint of any health care right is fundamentally unjust, and we know it will have particular harm on women of color, those of modest means, and those already suffering disparities under our current system. We cannot and we will not let it stand.
According to the CDC, 9% of abortions performed in New York in 2019 were for people from other states, about 7,000 individuals, and that number could grow four times or more. Illinois is the only other state in the nation that serves as many out-of-state abortion patients. This is Lee Bulkey with New York News Connection, Vendor A Trust Indicators for Transparency and Accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
That's a 2022 song from the band Glove called Radio Out on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Tom Rowe from Wave Farm with the Daily Radio News. Radio Insight reports that since President Donald Trump signed the 2020 Pirate Act, the Federal Communications Commission's Enforcement Bureau has begun to send warning letters not just to folks they believe are operating pirate radio stations, but also to the owners of the properties the FCC believes are hosting the broadcasts. Four real estate owners getting the letters now have 10 days to respond to the FCC that they are addressing the issue. Edwin and Joyce Pitt of Baltimore, Maryland, Maria V. Hernandez of Kissimmee, Florida, Richard Manson of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Kent and Deanna Coppinger of the Jefferson RV Park in Somerville, Oregon, got the letters that read in part, quote, "You are hereby notified and warned that the FCC may issue a fine of up to $2 million if we determine that you have continued to permit any individual or entity to engage in pirate radio broadcasting on the property that you own or manage," unquote. The new law Trump signed includes draconian $2 million fines for pirate radio operators or property owners. It was co-sponsored by Representative Paul Tonko, who represents Albany County and much of the Capital District, where there has not been any pirate radio activity reported in many years. While there has not been any local pirate radio activity to get Tonko's attention, he did receive $7,000 in donations during the 2016 campaign from the National Association of Broadcasters, a virulent anti-pirate radio organization. But Inside Radio reports that the new law so far is toothless. The COVID-19 pandemic limited field work by FCC agents, and the FCC says it does not have the manpower to fully implement all of the 2020 Pirates Act's mandates. And they also say they don't have the money to hire new agents. Quote, "President Biden's proposed spending plan for the fiscal year that begins October 1st would increase the FCC's budget by 4.3% in the coming year. Under the Biden proposal, the Enforcement Bureau would receive an increase of $5 million to implement the new law and to hire the 15 new employees," unquote, Inside Radio reports. David Gorin, a pirate radio expert who runs the PirateRadioMap.com, says that the FCC's new giant fines may be working, or pirates may be changing channels and locations. Gorin told Columbia Journalism Review last week that, quote, "Recently the FCC sent notices to three stations in Queens to landlords. There is a station in Queens that I'm able to hear in Brooklyn, probably 6 miles away, this Ecuadorian station. They were on the air when the notices came out, and they were on the air for several days after, but now they're no longer on that frequency, so they may have felt some pressure to shut down and move," unquote. This has been the Daily Radio News. Go to wavefarm.org for more radio news.
They'll never find out where we'll go. We can forward our calls illegally to Mexico. You can be the sleeping cure, and I'll memorize the verse of literature. From my secret mountain base, we can broadcast all over the place. Radio bomb. Government interests. From our secret underwater base, we
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Interesting, boring, really boring.
It'd be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs?
All the way down.
I turned it down.
Only dogs can hear.
Burn his...
I turned it down. Do it.
Did you hear that?
No.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The next few months could see us moving along a more unpredictable and potentially escalatory trajectory.
Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines expects Russia to expand its Ukraine offensive beyond the Donbas region. Testifying before the Senate Armed Services Committee, Haines noted Moscow uses nuclear rhetoric to deter the U.S. from increasing aid.
With tensions this high, there is always an enhanced potential for miscalculation, unintended escalation, which we hope our intelligence can help to mitigate.
The House is expected to approve $40 billion in additional Ukraine funding. The Senate will vote today on a federal abortion rights bill in response to a leaked Supreme Court draft opinion indicating Roe v. Wade could be overturned. Nevada Democrat Jacqueline Rosen.
Anti-choice politicians are working to eliminate reproductive rights. Make no mistake, this will cost women's lives.
The bill doesn't have enough support to pass, but the vote would put lawmakers on record during a midterm election year. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen suggested access to abortion results in positive financial outcomes for women.
Eliminating the right of women to make decisions about when and whether to have children would have very damaging effects on the economy and would set women back decades.
Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said should the GOP take control of the chamber, he would not support killing the filibuster to pass federal abortion restrictions. Most Senate Republicans believe abortion is a matter for the states. Lisa Cook was confirmed to serve on the Fed's Board of Governors, becoming the panel's first Black woman member. After the expected confirmation of Philip Jefferson, two Black board members will serve simultaneously for the first time. The national average gas price hit a new high of $4.11 Tuesday. Adjusted for inflation, prices are still below 2008's peak. Analysts expect another jump for the Memorial Day weekend. New York Congressman Tom Reed stepped down Tuesday, more than a year after he was accused of sexual misconduct by a former lobbyist.
It has been an honor to serve with you all from both parties. I love this institution as it still exemplifies what is best about our government. We are the people's house.
The Republican initially said the accusations were false, but later apologized in a statement. The House passed a resolution providing legal protection for staffers who unionize. The effort stems from anonymous stories posted on social media earlier this year documenting the financial struggles of congressional staff. Tesla CEO Elon Musk says he would reinstate former President Donald Trump's Twitter account, calling the ban following the January 6th attack morally wrong.
I don't own Twitter yet, so this is not like a thing that will definitely happen, because what if I don't own Twitter? But my opinion, and Jack Dorsey, I want to be clear, shares this opinion, is that we should not have perma-bans.
Trump has repeatedly said he prefers to stay on his own new platform, Truth Social. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
And joining us now is Alexis Goldsmith, Hudson Mohawk Magazine's plastics correspondent and national organizing director at Beyond Plastics, to give us an overview of a variety of bills coming up related to plastics. Welcome, Alexis.
Thanks for having me.
And I know there's a list of bills you want to talk about, and perhaps we won't be able to get to every one, but maybe you can get us started with whichever one you'd like to discuss first.
Sure. Well, first I'll say all these bills we're going to talk about are currently in the New York State Legislature, and they all relate to plastic waste and waste reduction. So the first ones I'll talk about are really straightforward. The Plastic Straws by Request Bill, which is Assembly Bill A207A and Senate Bill 1505A. It's exactly what it sounds like. It is plastic straws only by request. So restaurants cannot automatically give you a straw, but they do need to have them on hand for people who need a straw or request a straw.
And then, has that already taken effect in at the county level? Because I thought that already existed.
That exists in New York City. That passed last year and is now in effect in New York City, but we have a statewide bill sponsored by Assemblymember Rosenthal, and we're asking the Assembly and the Senate to pass these bills. The other one that's related to that or similar to that is the Plastic Cutlery Upon Request Bill. So that's Assembly Bill 5383, Senate Bill 8264. Same thing, restaurants cannot automatically give cutlery. They can only give it by request. So plastic cutlery and plastic straws are very common items that end up as litter. And when they end up as litter, when we have really heavy rains like we do in the Northeast, they get washed into our storm water systems, and eventually they wind up in the Hudson River, and then they wind up in the ocean, where they wind up in a turtle's nose or something like that. So,
right. We've all seen that video of the turtle. It became very popular to be anti-straw. And I was living in New York City. And one of the really important things that disability advocates brought up was the need for many people to use plastic straws. So that seems to be part of this by request inclusion. Is that kind of the basis of it? Is that some people actually need straws and they will ask for it, they will be available, but not to make it a thing that, you know, if I get a straw, I'll probably throw it out. So creating also a waste, even if I'm using it. So is that kind of part of the...
Yeah, absolutely. And same with the plastic cutlery. You know, some people need cutlery. If you're unhoused, for example, you may need cutlery. So... absolutely. Inclusion is an aspect in both of these bills.
So another question that I have is, I was researching straws and the amount of energy that goes into producing, for instance, a metal straw, and the amount of times that a metal straw is used still makes it a much more taxing thing to create on our environment than a plastic straw. Not to say that everybody's going to get a metal straw, but could you talk a little bit about like some of these alternative materials that we're using and how it often actually isn't a better alternative and it's kind of missing the point of less usage of these one-use materials?
Sure. Well, I think in a lot of cases with straws, you just don't need the straw, period. So you don't necessarily need to replace the plastic straw with another material. Secondly, you're right, it depends on how many times you use a reusable item that you're replacing the disposable with. So we have a hard time in our culture with reusing things because we've grown so used to disposable items. So a big part of this is behavior change and people getting used to reusing items, cleaning items, packing them with you, like remembering your umbrella, you got to remember your reusable straw. Those reusable items aren't getting thrown away like they would be if they were disposable. But I can't stress enough how important it is that we move away from disposables and switch to reusable items.
So you've talked about reduce and reuse. The third is obviously recycling, and there's something called the Oppose Advanced Recycling Bill. Why would anybody oppose recycling?
Well, it's not, the name of the bill is the Advanced Recycling Bill, and we at Beyond Plastics, we oppose that bill. So that's what that memo was. So the Advanced Recycling Bill, Assembly Bill 9495, Senate Bill 7891, it's being championed by Senator Manion. This bill is actually just burning plastics, to be straightforward.
Burning plastics?
Yes. So advanced recycling goes by many names. It can be called advanced recycling, chemical recycling, gasification, pyrolysis, methanolysis, solvolysis, and I'm sure there's other names. But all of these processes are not recycling. Yes, they are turning plastic into low-grade fuel to be burned. Or sometimes I've read of cases where they're actually just shipping the plastic waste to cement kilns to be burned. So burning plastic for fuel, burning plastic for quote unquote recovered energy is not recycling because it's not turning the plastic into a new product. And the reason why we oppose this bill is because obviously burning plastic is harmful for the environment and releases greenhouse gas emissions, releases toxics like mercury, lead, cadmium, toluene, benzene, styrene, dioxins, furans. And dioxin is a very, very potent toxin that lingers in the environment for a long time. It's the same ingredient that was in Agent Orange. So obviously we oppose burning plastics, but more importantly, we oppose burning plastics and calling it recycling.
Well, it recycles landfill into air pollution.
Yes.
That's one way to look at it.
Right. But the thing about this bill in particular, the Advanced Recycling Bill, is that it removes longstanding oversight of plastic waste. So it's deregulating plastic waste. And the way it does that is it redefines plastic waste to be feedstock for manufacturing, and it defines advanced recycling to not be incineration, but to be considered manufacturing. So the reason why that's important is because under Section 129 of the Clean Air Act, the Environmental Protection Agency is required to regulate any facility which combusts any solid waste material as an incinerator. So these advanced recycling laws, which are often pushed by the American Chemistry Council, are attempting to skirt environmental regulations for incinerators, which deprives communities of their equal protections under the Clean Air Act for a clean and healthy environment.
Wow. And because I love alliteration, I'm going to ask about the Bigger Better Bottle Bill.
The Bigger Better Bottle Bill. I love this bottle bill. So if you're like me, you collect all of your deposit containers. And in my community, I just drop them off for the Boy Scouts. But a lot of people take them to the redemption center around the corner for the 5 cents back. And you put it in your jar for your rainy day fund. Or some people do that for their income, actually, especially in New York City. So the Bigger Better Bottle Bill builds on the successful New York State Bottle Bill, which has been around for 40 years. It expands the types of containers that are eligible for deposit to include wine, spirits, hard ciders, and most non-carbonated beverages. And it also increases the deposit from 5 cents to 10 cents, which is really important for not only increasing the redemption rate, but for those canners, the people who live on the margins, who collect deposit containers for their income. And these people do a very important environmental service, and they deserve a raise. So that bill is the Bigger Better Bottle Bill. It's Assembly Bill 10184, We're still looking for a champion in the Senate to introduce this bill. So if you're listening, call your state senator and say, please, will you introduce the Bigger Better Bottle Bill in the New York State Senate?
Something that isn't obvious, I think, when we see those deposit numbers on bottles, and I didn't know it for a long time, was you actually pay for that extra 5 cents or 10 cents. And so if you don't deposit your bottles, that money is actually going back to the company that you're buying your whatever beverage from. Isn't that right?
It actually goes back to the, I believe the unspent money goes to recycling efforts.
But, oh, okay.
And no, it doesn't go back to the company. No.
Oh, that's good to know.
But you should still redeem your deposits, even if you don't care about the 5 cents, because it's really the best way to recycle materials.
And why hasn't it increased? I mean, that's part of what you are proposing here. But it, having lived in Europe, it just feels like we're kind of behind the times here.
We are totally behind the times. And, you know, I can only, this is conjecture, that the reason in New York State it hasn't increased is because of lobbying efforts by companies like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Nestle. These companies have been very successful in killing bottle bills in other states, and we only have 9 states that have bottle bills. We need a national bottle bill. And Coke, just to put it in perspective, produces 200,000 bottles every minute. So that's a lot of bottles, and they don't want to pay for it.
And just to follow up on that, I know that Beyond Plastics recently put out a newsletter about the recent commercial with Bill Nye. Can you talk a little bit about why that's so problematic?
Right. So that commercial was greenwashing. It was a short claymation video with Bill Nye voicing over. He was basically saying that the good people, quote unquote, at Coke are working really hard to protect the environment by recycling our bottles. And you can feel good about yourself if you put your bottle in the bin to be recycled. But the problem with that is that Coca-Cola for 4 years straight has been one of the top 3 plastic polluters in the entire world. That means that Coke products are the most found pieces of litter on beaches and waterways worldwide. So they have a plastic PR problem, and they're trying to greenwash their way out of it. And I'm sad that Bill Nye was party to that.
Yeah,
and
very sad.
For a quick question, you have lots of details, lots of amazing facts and background information. I took the class at Bennington College on plastics with Judith Thank and you. And could you tell us a little bit about the class and when it's next being offered?
Yes, so the class is underway right now. This class is called Beyond Plastic Pollution. So you will learn everything you ever wanted to know about plastic pollution and everything you didn't want to know, like the fact that we're breathing plastic and 2 to 6% of household dust is microplastics. But besides that, it also teaches you advocacy.
Whoa. Up to 6%?
Yes. Of household plastic pollution. So besides that, it teaches you advocacy skills. So it's not just, oh, this is a problem and we need to fix it, but how do we fix it? And can you feel empowered to act on this problem that feels so big and is so global? And really, this problem is at its root a fossil fuel and climate change problem. So we're connecting all the dots between plastics, climate change, racial justice, environmental justice, health, and that's what this class does. So if you're interested, go to beyondplastics.org/events. The fall class hasn't been posted yet, but you can just keep checking our website, or better yet, sign up for our email list, and then you'll get notified.
This has been very informative. Thank you for joining us, Alexis Goldsmith. I got out of it that behavior change is really more important than not having a straw, and calling your representatives is the way to action.
Yes.
Anything else to add before we let you go?
You know, next week I want to come back and talk about extended producer responsibility, because we didn't have time to cover it all today. But again, we talked about the Bigger Better Bottle Bill, the plastic straws by request bill, the plastic cutlery by request bill, and why we oppose the advanced recycling bill in the New York State Senate.
Thanks a lot, Alexis. Good talking with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.